Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith
and Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy podcast. This is your host, Matt Dye, and I'm excited because I'm sitting here in the office this morning kind of watching the sunrise on a beautiful spring morning, and the sun's just coming up, and I've got Kyle Hedges online with me, and we were just reminiscing about spring mornings, Easter feasts, and spring turkey hunting. And it is just around the corner for us. So we're pumped. Kyle, how are you doing this morning?
Yep, doing good.
Good.
Excited to be. I'll be hunting before you, so hopefully I'll be sending pictures from Kansas, rubbing it in your face.
Actually, I forgot. You know, you will be hunting before me in Missouri, but I may have the opportunity. I'm going back to visit family and work in Virginia in the coming weeks, and
nice.
I will be. See, Virginia opens up like the 10th or 11th, and I'll be there then. So I might have the opportunity to at least tag along, or I might buy a tag. We'll see how things are looking, how the weather looks. But, yeah, I may be right there with you that same week.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. See, I got all cocky, and then you're going to be rubbing it in my face from Virginia.
Hey, that's all right. If you kill a bird and I kill a bird, that's totally fine. Totally
fine. All good.
That's right. Man, I am excited for turkey season. This is kind of times of the year where everything just, I wouldn't say it slows down, but we just take a little bit of time to make sure we can go and catch a breath and chase this awesome and amazing bird that gives us the thrills. But, you know, today's podcast, we're going to be talking about a type of habitat management that is, you mentioned it earlier, is extremely intentional for a specific reason, but has a lot of crossover into hunting strategies, though, too, for wild turkeys during the spring based on their behavior that is consistent from year to year to year to year. So, Kyle, why don't you talk us through, you know, this week's podcast and how we've utilized, whether it's recommended on consultations or seen on our own observations on our own properties and the techniques we're using to almost pinpoint after a bird flies down, what it's doing, where it's going to.
Yeah. So today, you know, we're going to talk about strut zones and turkeys are unique in the sense that most species, we don't have to provide this one specific window of, you know, that fits their behavior. We don't have to do anything special for quail breeding season. Sure, they need nesting cover. Of course, we need that for turkeys. But as far as calling mates and doing that, you know, quail figure it out. Deer, we don't have to do anything specific for the rut. Yes, we make bedding zones, but that's for year round.
Mm-hmm.
We may use that for hunting strategy as well, but turkeys are pretty unique with this strutting behavior, and they have to have some type of habitat or lack thereof, I guess, and not lack thereof, but lack thereof, you know, taller vegetation. They needed this open space to be able to go strut around. And that can be a lot of things. That can be in a lot of places, and we're going to go through some of that today here. But, you know, they got to be visible to the hens. They got to feel like they can be seen and move around in the open. And it has to be reasonably close to where they're roosting, you know. If we're installing strut zones or prescribing them for somebody to put in and the known roost or whatever, depends on the property. Maybe you got four known roosts, but, you know, putting a strut zone 400 yards from the known sycamore that they roost on every night, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't mean it might get used at 1 o'clock in the afternoon sometimes.
Sure.
But there's a lot of strategy into kind of where these are going on the farm and also what vegetation is around them, what's nearby, where's the potential nesting cover. Same deal. If we've got a strut zone, that's probably where they're going to be the first thing in the morning. And if the nearest nesting cover is half mile away, well, that's we probably need to work on nesting cover on this farm in the first place.
good first point.
I mean, right. So, you know, there's lots of things to consider here and lots of ways to skin a cat. We can get these strut zones put in with a lot of different techniques. And we've used a lot of those techniques and prescribed those to landowners.
And that's the cool part about, I don't want to say that it shouldn't be well thought out, because it is an intentional practice to be used, but what really just needs to occur, and again, there's a lot of ways to make this happen, but in most places, the starting game is we need a reduction of that vegetation and structure within a given area that birds would likely want to frequent and show off. I think if people go back, they've been following along with this Wild Turkey podcast series. Some of the first ones that we did, we were talking with Frank, and the exploded lek or expanded lek theory with turkeys. There are these areas that they frequented, strutted, and gobbled from, tried to attract hens to. This is a kind of what we're trying to bring together from the research side of things and then into the hunting realm of, we can essentially, if we think them through and understand how the bird works with topography, uses natural resources, we can almost pinpoint where these locations should be and then create them with means of mowing. Obviously, that's not as highly preferred as disking or prescribed fire, but still, for this type of practice, if you're in a pasture and it gets too tall, well, sure, you can just go mow it. I don't suggest that you go and spray a farm's pasture out to create one of these. But, you know, every situation has its ability to manipulate it and create a better strut zone for wild turkeys.
Yeah, you bet. And I'll name one more, and that's food plots. Lots of times our food plots that we're using, maybe they are for turkeys, maybe they're for deer, maybe it's a combination, maybe it's going to be for poults and stuff, but the right type of food plot planted at the right time or the right vegetation types planted can be great strut zones.
Without a doubt.
Timing plays into it too. Let me just give an example of, you know, wheat lots of times, or maybe the legacy blend or something like that. You know, it's got wheat, oats, rice, and clover. My Kansas farm, first thing in the morning last year, opening day, right into a legacy plot. Here comes two gobblers, comes right to the, you know, half strut decoy and a hen. I mean, just textbook. This stuff is ankle high.
Yep.
Well, and so it worked great. My buddy kills one of the gobblers. Well, that's, you know, season opened over there this year. It opens April 14th.
Yep.
Well, if I'm...
Flash forward.
maybe I don't get to hunt. I'm a guy that says, hey, I don't get to hunt till after Mother's Day for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in Kansas or Oklahoma or Arkansas, and I want to hunt. I think, oh, I'm going to plant this wheat plot or this legacy blend, and it'll be for a strut zone. It'll be great for fall, you know, deer hunting, and it'll be my strut zone in the spring. Well, if you're not hunting till mid-May, it ain't going to work, because it's going to be thigh high.
That's right.
And the birds aren't going to want to use it. So timing is important, too. We need to understand where we're at in the universe, the growth rate of stuff, and understand that these birds will use certain fields, but then abandon them when they get too tall. You know, they got dew on them. They don't want to get their feathers wet in the morning. That's just not what they're looking for. So they're going to move on to something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why understanding just the bird itself, first and foremost, allows you to then build out what the habitat is. And that's essentially what we do every single day. We're just going very specific into strut zone management. But take a cool season grass pasture, for that matter. Let's say cows aren't in it and they're not grazing. Let's say, you know, that it's a rotationally grazed farm. We see this very often. Birds will maneuver around and utilize pastures that cows have just been in because they've grazed it off. And now they'll get to get in there right after fly down and utilize that field. They may be going through, scratching through cow pies, turning them over, getting fly larvae, whatever the case may be. But take a pasture field April 20th and compare it to the third or, you know, last week in a Missouri season. And they're not going to be in there if cows haven't grazed it, because going back to like what you talked about with wheat, it goes through a bolt stage and it puts on 2-3 foot worth of growth in that time frame and heads out. You get soaking, sopping wet when you try and walk through that first thing in the morning. And it's probably not, based on then the structure, an area where that bird can go and strut easily, maneuver through it, and be seen. There's a very important visual composition to making this whole thing work, as well as vocal. They need to be heard, so topography plays into it, but they need to be seen too, because they're doing an intentional act. They are displaying themselves. So you can't have this just 3-4 foot tall worth of growth and say, well, I've got an opening. You know, the opening needs to be open to a certain extent throughout the entire season if you want to be utilized as a strut zone.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, if you're, let's say you're not hunting later in the season, you already know, you know, my, well, God willing, my Kansas trip, you know, I go hunt the front part of the season and, mm-hmm. and hopefully that's it.
Right.
You know, they're down to one bird limit. So mm-hmm. If I kill a bird, that I'm not going to be hunting later in the season.
Sure.
So I don't care if a certain specific strut zone of my property has grown up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now the birds do though.
Right.
So even biology wise, do I want to keep them on my farm? Mm-hmm. I need to be thinking about other mm-hmm. things too. Like, you know, okay, when the legacy blend gets too tall, where are these birds going to go? I always have birds on this northeast corner of this farm.
Right.
So where are they going to go? Can I make something that'll be a secondary, you know, second half of the season strut zone over there?
Yep.
With fire, with, you know, whatever technique I need to do.
You may choose in a food plot situation to terminate that food plot a little bit earlier than what you normally would. For planting purposes, to then kind of kill two birds, get it, with one stone, and terminate that plot a little early before it gets to an incredible bolting stage, and now they can utilize it throughout the whole season and be utilizing as a strut zone, maybe increase, you know, the reproduction rate. Who knows? I mean, that's kind of an extended thought there, but like,
yep.
they're going to figure out a way to strut and display, whether you have a food plot sprayed off or not. They're going to do it in the timber, what have you, but it just allows the bird to do what it does naturally without complications or without,
yep.
which seems silly, but why would we want the habitat to interfere with, you know, a natural process the birds needs to go through to create more turkeys? that should be a sign. If you're having birds leave a farm, and I've hunted, I can think of several farms in the past 5 years, specifically one down in Oklahoma. We followed up and made this recommendation to the landowner, but you need to create these openings if you want birds later in the season, if you're not specifically managing for them and you don't have this type of habitat. We have seen birds leave farms, and not just small farms, but larger farms. It was a large wintering area, and we were very excited to see or hear the landowner talk about gobs of turkey, not even flocks, but just gobs. And by the time we got there, there was a considerable amount of growth in food plots, as well as some of the native areas. And there just was not this opportunity for birds to get in and strut. And even in the bottomland timber, based on the amount of cool season grasses, it was head high for a turkey by the time we got there. And that's fantastic for that system to be operating like that. But specifically, if you wanted to kill turkeys, it just needed to be managed slightly different. And so we had also prescribed to this landowner from a purpose of deer hunting and land management, large areas of some overgrown, thick, rank Bermuda pastures, and they needed to be sprayed off. And then now they're lightly disced in certain areas for these strut zones. And so just in a matter of a year changing and switching, now we've got the opportunity for strut zones, and we're hopeful. I got some pictures the other day and heard of the number of turkeys that were still wintering and hanging on to this farm because of some of the practices that were done. So lightly disced, burn some of those off after initially going and spraying some of the rank and overgrown Bermuda. And I know Bermuda really is short, but there was a lot of other things mixed in, herbaceous weeds coming through. So it really was not a wonderful strut zone area for turkeys adjacent to common roost sites. So I don't want people to be confused there, but it all to say, if you don't have what they need, sometimes they will leave for sure. Especially in your case there, Kyle, you know, being in a very northeast corner, they pitched down the wrong way on that farm. They could be on a neighbor's.
Yep. I've seen that over the years, you know, off and on quite a bit. And sometimes, regardless of what I do, they're spending some time, you know, it depends on, they make the daily loop, right? Mm-hmm. Whether they start out south or start out north, I'll have them on me at some point each day.
Sure.
It's just a matter of whether they come north or south first. But, you know, something else folks need to think about, this whole, we're talking about these strut zones, the size.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, this doesn't have to be acres and acres. In fact, I don't necessarily mm-hmm. want it to be that big.
Yeah.
It depends. Sometimes it is. If I go burn a, you know, again, well, a couple different farms in Kansas, I burned this year several different fields. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, yeah, I mean, there's a 20 acre strut zone because I burned off a 20 acre CRP field.
Yep.
But if I'm intentionally installing these somewhere, I mean, we're only talking an acre, that half an acre, maybe. I mean, yeah. It doesn't have to be anything huge. You know, a football field is an acre. So
yep.
I'm not talking about something gigantic. And in fact, the bigger you get, the harder it is to hunt, to be honest
Absolutely.
With you. So,
and that's where this strategy, it needs to be in place and not take up too much space at the same time, because if you're trying to utilize it as a hunting strategy, you still want to find that success rate in there.
Right. Well, and a lot of times, so a lot of what we're going to prescribe to folks and what we do prescribe, the strut zones are a byproduct. It's not even intentional. So, hey, you're on this burn rotation. So let's say you got three different fields and on a 200 acre farm. I'm going to mix it up more than that. We're going to have six different, we have three open fields, but we probably have six burn units.
Yep.
You know, burn half of this field one year and half a field two another year and half a field three another year. And then the other halves, you know, we're going to mix those things around. So as a byproduct, we're going to have this, depending on where you live in the country, you know, what timing of the burning. Further south you are, obviously you're gonna have to burn earlier mm-hmm. for turkeys to be strutting in it, but also because of green up and things. But it becomes a byproduct, and for my own farms that happens anyway. A lot of my strutting areas is just a byproduct of what I'm already doing.
Right.
But I think about the rotation as I'm doing that.
Certainly.
You know, I have birds on the northeast corner. I just gave an example of, well, I also have some on this same farm. There'll be some strung out in between, just depends on the year. But I always have some in the northeast corner, and I always have some on the very western fence line. Mm-hmm. And there's a giant sycamore. It's on the neighbor. Good neighbor. So, you know, no big deal. But he has a field that he mows the tip of over there every year for a strut zone.
Yep.
Well, my side of the fence is a CRP field.
Sure.
So I have the better nesting cover,
mm-hmm.
but not exactly, you know, birds aren't looking to come strut out there.
Sure.
So if I ever want any chance at those birds, I have to do something intentional over there. Well, every third year, That field's burnt. I burn that field. Mm-hmm. So 1 out of 3 years, the stage is already set.
Yep.
You know, I've got the strut zone, so I can compete and get those birds on my side of the fence part of the season. But the other 2 out of 3 years, I have to do something. I have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, no, neither here nor there, but it's, you know, it's across the creek. A food plot's not an option or hasn't been, just the pain. The creek's up sometimes, can't deal with it. So typically it's just I mow out a little spot. So we both are offering a similar type thing.
Sure.
I usually have more nesting birds. I have better nesting cover than my neighbor does. So, you know, it just becomes a game of kind of competing for the same birds a little bit.
Sure.
And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I'd prefer they stay on me more than, you know, going to the north or to the east, to the west. I know this landowner, but the other places, I don't know who all's hunting there. It's another, you know, this is in Kansas. I don't live over there.
Right.
I'm going to be a little greedy and try to keep birds on me as much as possible. And especially with, you know, populations that are struggling a little bit. I mean, if I can keep more birds on me longer, then maybe more of them make it to next year. And,
right. You know the hunting pressure that's on your place.
That's
like,
right.
It's a little bit of an unknown on some of their neighboring ground. So, you know, that's only natural. But again, we're doing this from a double-edged sword sort of thing, from the hunting strategy. But this is the aspect that I really, really like when it comes to creating these stretch zones, and where there's an extreme overlap for, you know, habitat, for white-tailed deer. Because let's just say you've got a food plot, you've got old field management, or you've got CRP. Really, no matter how you shake it, whatever your tool or technique that you're utilizing in those systems to create a strut zone, something's growing back. Or you're planting something back in a food plot situation that then is still going to be high-quality forage. But you're creating diversity within an existing system. If you don't, for like your instance, the CRP, you're taking a chunk out of it and mowing it. Well, guess what? Now we've got multiple stages of regrowth structure in that area. They can come utilize it, you know, navigate through it relatively easily. And once it begins to grow back, now we've got different stages of that growth for either brood rearing or different stages for nesting cover. And I think of old field management as a wonderful opportunity for creating strut zones, but then having in that exact same strut zone, you wait, you know, let's just say early June, July timeframe. That area is incredibly rich with diversity, lots of forbs. So we're going to naturally see a higher density of insects in there. So not only have we created a strut zone for turkey season, but then we've also created wonderful brood rearing habitat in an area that, you know, I'm air quoting is for deer, but that deer food is now younger. At the same time, it can be also utilized for dropping fawns. And so there's this mixture of where all these wildlife species kind of overlap and their, whether it's nutritional needs or requirements or their cover needs. And so we've created a lot of different things by intentionally going in and creating a strut zone, depending on, again, which type of habitat you're starting with. But you're doing multiple things as you're creating, keyword again, diversity within a diverse system, specifically old field management. Hopefully it's very rich with lots of different species, but then we're changing the composition and we're changing the structure of it and the timing of how we're disturbing it to create hunting as well as good habitat. To me, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, back to the pun intended, you're killing two birds with one stone.
I mean,
you're getting the best of both worlds out of this. You know, there's a just popped in my head something we need to mention too. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we can pull off a strut zone with no management, mm-hmm. an intentional kind of dead spot. And this is going to seem counterintuitive to everything we preach, but everyone knows that Land and Legacy is anti closed canopy forest, right? Like, you've got to get in there and do something. But again, yeah. Remember, we're talking about what size.
Yes.
We're not talking
yes.
about, you know, 50 acre strut zone here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you're a listener, well, even in the Midwest where your farm is broken up with open fields and timber, or maybe you're in one of these states, you know, where, hey, my whole farm is timber. These guys are talking about strut zones. And
yep.
Well, guess what? Everybody knows plenty of people kill turkeys that never come out of the timber,
yep.
right? They strut all morning in the timber. Well, again, that can be intentional. If we think about it, we need to be thinking about what we're doing to our timber. Open timber is a great strut zone. It's
yep.
wide open. Having some herbaceous, hopefully if this, you know, you need to do some timber management, because there's got to be a purpose for the hens to want to hang around.
Certainly.
If this gobbler, yeah, it's great for him to strut, but if there's no reason for a hen to be there picking bugs or picking seeds or whatever, you know, is out, if it's warm enough that the bugs are already out, that's what the hens are going to be picking. If there's no food for the hens, they're not hanging out there,
no.
and he's not using that strut zone. So we need some level of food around this, at least on the edges of this strut zone or something. But I'm picturing here, you know, a big timber unit that somebody's listened to the podcast enough and said, by God, I'm tired of this timber. I can see 100 yards through, and I'm going to do something about it. And that's great. And you go in and you run a bunch of, you know, tanks of sawgas and run fire through there, and we've got this great herbaceous layer going, and things are going great. But you need to consider, where my turkey's going to strut. If they're normally in that piece of timber, you're going to have something that they can be open, move around. We need to consider that. So do you leave out a little, you know, some little half acre spots here and there that maybe you leave more open? Or again, maybe it's burn timing, so it's okay some years, but all that stuff needs to be considered when we're thinking about this. And then location too, right? I don't want to just, yeah. oh, I'm gonna leave a little piece of closed canopy timber on a, you know, 20 degree north slope. Well, that's not where the turkeys are gonna strut, right? I either want it on a ridge top, their turkeys are gonna like to be on there, or yep. a bench. How many times have you seen turkeys, especially riparian zones,
mm-hmm.
where they're on that middle bench and they'll strut just back and forth, back
yes.
and forth. They're not up on the ridge. They're not clear down in the bottom necessarily. They get on that middle bench. So just, you know, think about turkey behavior, and hopefully it's on farms where you already kind of know where turkeys have used in the past. But if future management, like timber management, is going to jeopardize some of that, then you may need to think about how you can strategically leave a few spots for turkeys
yeah.
to strut in.
And I think there's fantastic points. And sometimes we go back to the scale conversation. Guys, take a backpack blower in the dormant season, blow off, put fire lines in the middle of the timber on a ridge top. Maybe you've got birds that always roost out on this one point. Sometimes they pitch down on the ridge top and work the ridge top, strut back and forth. Or sometimes you feel like whenever you call, they pitch down into the bottom and they go the other way. Preseason, if whatever timber there is, go in there, blast out fire lines in an acre on that ridgetop somewhere where you can access very cleanly, and naturally that bird is going to want to be on that area, that ridgetop, for a strut zone and for gobbling purposes. But go in there, burn off an acre, burn off maybe tops 2 acres. It does not have to be even a half acre. It does not have to be this large, giant, you know, area. I think of some areas, let's go to gosh, let's just take Virginia, North Carolina, for example. Sometimes in that timber, you've got big, tall spruce trees, but your mid-story is so dense, chock full. Let's just say American holly is come in there. We'll go in there, remove the mid-story, and come back, burn that unit half acre, acre in size, pre-season, and go kill birds on it. Just do you know, a fly down call, scratching the leaves, and call it done. Don't have to call that bird, but make a focal point in this area that is, you know, vastly closed canopy. It's homogenous. It's offering the same thing, and change that ability for it to come and strut and be seen. Because again, removing the holly, you're giving the visual aspect, can be seen from a larger distance. But then removing the leaf litter, now we're changing the forage or the ability for a bird to go in there and forage during season. Hens will be attracted to that area, so therefore gobblers will be attracted to that area. And it doesn't have to be part of a 50-acre burn unit. If you're scared to burn, create really good fire breaks and start small. But do it in specific areas that you're going to have birds come into. Yeah, sure, we may not want large areas of closed canopy forest, but I think of some of the areas that I was killing turkeys in when I was growing up. It was wonderful, beautiful hardwoods. And those are great mass-producing areas for deer in, let's say, October that I was hunting them in. Birds were in there because they could be seen and cast out their gobbles from a long distance away. But I could have easily gone in and burned off a little section in there and made it just that much more consistent of bird, let's say, behavior and routine, what they were doing as they went to the limb at night, and then as soon as they pitched down, where they were headed to.
Oh, you bet. And man, the fire deal is a real kicker. If I have a chance of sitting in a piece of burnt timber or a piece of unburned timber, even if the unburned timber is typically where the birds want to, you know, let's say I'm only 100 yards difference here.
Yeah.
Usually they want to strut over there, but I burned this half of the timber. I can assure you I'm sitting in the burned half. And research shows that. Mm-hmm. You talked on the podcast, I think, with Dr. Chamberlain.
Right.
I mean, they're picking burnt bugs and just whether the burn was last week or 3 weeks ago. If yeah. it's, you know, several weeks ago, the new growth is coming. They're picking shoots of stuff, green shoots. There's bugs on the new growth. And same way with a field. If I've got a choice of a, you know, hunting a mowed field or a hay field or something versus a burnt field, I'm taking the burnt field every time.
Absolutely.
I have killed birds where there was still logs and sticks smoking in the woods from a burn, you know, a couple days before.
Yeah.
And sitting there, you'll get your turkey hunting clothes pretty filthy. Don't come home and sit on your wife's couch or anything. But other than that, it's... And you don't get covered in as many ticks while you're turkey hunting either.
That's exactly right.
If you're sitting in a burn unit. So
yeah.
Wind, there's lots of wins with this.
Yeah, it's just we don't have to complicate things when we're creating strut zones. We just need to use a little bit of our woodsmanship skills to know where birds have frequented in years past and where birds typically are. Think about this. If every season you're thinking or you're hearing birds gobble at like 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning every single day in one specific spot, or you commonly strike birds up there during those time frames, I'm going to be keying into a location like that and say, why are they selecting that? What are they going there for? Typically, that time of the day, they're trying to strut or they're trying to gobble up another hen. So I'm like, that's an area I want to check out. What can I do there? And depending on if it's timber or if it's an open field or a food plot, I want to manipulate it ahead of season to make sure that I've got great strutting locations and maybe I can create decent nesting cover or great brooding cover as the year progresses, as spring moves into summer. So I'm going to take that idea of creating strut zones and say, how can I manipulate it? Which technique is the best? Burning, mowing, or herbicide? What can I do here to make this the best for strutting and then therefore brooding cover, nesting cover later in the year? So I know someone's thinking like distance wise from a roost to a strut zone. What would you think, Kyle, would be ideal distance that you wouldn't, let's say, you wouldn't want to be this close, but you wouldn't want to be this far away? Was like, they roost here, man, like it's just routine. It's just all the time.
I would prefer to be within, you know, a couple hundred yards.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily, I've got a situation on a farm that sometimes works out to where, in fact, a burn I just did the other day may cause this to happen, but sometimes it's sail off the limb and land in my strut zone.
Yeah.
It makes it harder to hunt. I don't mm-hmm. want it 45 yards from right. the limb they're sitting on, but sometimes it's going to be that way. Mm-hmm. But no, I would think, you know, 100, 200 yards is ideal range. They fly down, work their way over to it, and then they're going to be strutting there. You get 400 plus.
A lot of hens can come in between a gobbler and Tom, yeah. between when he flies down from the roost and gets to that strut zone.
There's a lot of stuff going on, and what are they going to have to go through across that 400 yards? I mean, if it's a heavy dew morning and they got to work, if it's open timber, maybe not that big a deal. They may kind of be strutting, or maybe just be a continuous strut zone, and they work their way over to this little clover plot or whatever it is, but if it's, you know, if I got a CRP field between where they're roosting and and it hasn't been burned, I'm in trouble. Mm-hmm, they're just mm-hmm. not going to wade through.
Or big creek crossing or something like that.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. And yeah, I think distance does matter. And hey, there's nothing, you know, some folks, you're just going to have to try some stuff too, yeah. right? If you're on a farm, hey, I just bought this farm. I'm not sure. I don't know where the birds are hanging out. Well, spend a couple years paying attention, but try some stuff. This mm-hmm. isn't stuff that's going to be like irreversible. Oh my gosh, no. I ruined the farm.
No,
you
not
know,
yep.
You try a few things, say, well, that didn't work, or this did work. Or, I mean, that's how we learn a lot of this stuff over time on a farm. You just got to try some different stuff.
You do. And that's where I think it's important, whatever your, you know, type of technique, or whatever area you're starting with, think through which technique is going to give me the response that I need, so that reduction of structure, but then the increase in forage capability. Because just as much as we're calling it a strut zone, during turkey season, the more food that you can create from an attraction of the hens, you're going to create more opportunities and a higher likelihood that a gobbler is going to be coming in there and checking those areas too. Almost like a food plot when a buck comes in and checks during November. Like, if that's an area where birds are frequenting, well, they're going to come and check. And then they're going to be more likely, in a scenario standpoint, for a bird to be calling you as a hunter, mimicking a hen, to say, you know what, that is a good spot. I'm going to go there. I'm going to check it out. There probably is a hen. Now, that's a lot for a turkey to think through, and I don't think they quite think that far in advance. However, you're creating a situation or scenario that is probable. And I think that's important to remember when you're calling to a turkey is, does this make sense? And that's where, Kyle, you just were talking about, what is it that he has to cross from where he's gobbling at to get to this area? Does it make sense for a turkey to be able to traverse that? In this type of situation where their senses, let's say, are probably heightened, let's just create the scenario that, again, high frequency of birds utilizing it, or it's an area where they want to come in and check. I want to create that. So pick your disturbance wisely, try it out, give it a whirl, see what happens.
You bet. Hey, you just hit on, you know, one last thing, mm-hmm. one last point that popped in my head here. You mentioned that what the hens are picking on and eating there. Well, we always preach diversity, and this is yet another example.
Yeah.
Especially in a food plot situation. If you got the option of planting wheat in the fall, and that's going to be, hey, that'll be a great strut zone. Eh, that'll work a lot of times. But if I can plant, you know, a 10 species mix, I'm going to do that every time, because now I've got lots of different bug types that are going to be in that in the spring. Yeah. Way more chances that the hens are going to be picking around in there rather than just straight wheat. Think about things like that too. So diversity matters even in the open field. Like, what do I have coming up? Is it just grass? Is it grass and forbs? Because that's what's going to be feeding the hens, and that's why they're going to be hanging around there, and that's where the gobbler wants to be.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the Legacy blend earlier. That's a high species blend, and you know, we think about the growth rates in that. You're going through a, you know, many of the cereal grains, you're going from a blade stage to a bolting head stage throughout turkey season, yet you've got a lot of annual clovers that in yep. late April through May and June, the frosty berseem, the balanza, those things are heading out and putting on a flower, attracting an immense amount of insect life there. So maybe in that situation, if you have that high diverse blend, it may not be best to terminate because you know that it's going to be a brooding area in the weeks to come, or just have that much more leafy green forage. Maybe the best thing for you to do is, as it bolts, go in there and just clip it, hit the top of it off, because you're going to have this, you know, 2 foot more growth worth of the triticale, the wheat, the oats in there as it's putting its seed head on. Yet underneath of all that, where you want birds to feel comfortable strutting in and feeding in, that's what's attracting those birds at that time frame. So again, just think through that disturbance that you're utilizing. It may not be best to go and terminate early, depending on the species that you've planted and what's offered, you know, not only now, but in the weeks to come too. That's where it's important to say, what are your goals when you're planting a food plot? What are you trying to do? Who is that going to serve? And then that allows you to make that determination of what's my best disturbance moving forward. And then again, timing as well. A lot in that, but these are the questions as a hunter or as a land manager, when you are working the land, that you should be asking yourself. It's not just, oh, I'm just going to go plant some stuff. I'm just going to go plant a food plot. Well, what's the goal? What's the purpose? Who are you trying to serve by, you know, giving your time, giving your weekend to the land, essentially? What are you trying to accomplish here? And I think that when you begin to ask yourself those types of questions, your efficiency and probably proficiency of managing the land goes way up.
Yep, absolutely. It is a lot to think about, but it really doesn't have to be that complicated. It's just a different way of thinking.
Absolutely.
You need to be looking at your property through a different set of eyes sometimes, I think, and thinking about lots of different things, and just purposeful management in everything we do is important. If you're ever sitting on the tractor on your property, just bumping along, you're just running the brush hog, and you can't answer, why am I doing this?
Shut off the PTO.
Yes.
And take the tractor back to the barn.
I mean, yes. More specifically, how is this going to benefit my wildlife and at what times of year? If you can't answer that, or if it's, yeah, then shut it off.
Exactly.
We need purposeful management.
Without a doubt. Well, Kyle, I appreciate it, man. This was a fun podcast. I'm glad you were able to jump on this early morning and talk turkey strut zones with everyone here. Best of luck to you in Kansas and Missouri this year.
Yep. Thank you, sir. This makes it way worse now. This all this talking about it. We gotta go. Get something done.
Building the anticipation. Well, this afternoon I got to drive to Mississippi, and I know they're hot and heavy into turkey hunting, but I'm working tomorrow. Maybe I'll get lucky enough to hear a bird gobble in the distance as we're working, but just a short, quick trip, and then I'll be back up here and anxiously awaiting Missouri and Virginia. And I'm actually going to run to Kansas this year too. Got an invite to go kind of north central. You guys will be hearing more about that in the weeks to come. But man, I'm just excited. I'm ready. Yep. It is that time, and I actually slept with the windows open last night and woke up this morning. It was like, those birds are just singing right now. And I love it.
Yep. Spring's here. It's go time.
It is go time. Well, sir, take care. Thank you again for jumping on.
Yep. We'll talk to you later. Yep.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.